What is the nature of the mitzvah of Shemitah Bizman Hazeh nowadays? Is it Doraita? Is it biblical? Or is it just midrabanan, merely rabbinic? That's our question this morning. And we'll also ask, v'lamai nafkamina? What are the practical implications? What are the consequences if we say that Shemitah is deoraita, min ha-Torah, that it's biblical, or that it's just midrabanan, merely rabbinic? Okay? And we'll see that there are actually major implications and implications very much relevant to our experience of Shemitah here in the state of Israel, Bizman Hazeh. So first take a look at source number one. These are psukim from Vayikra Perek Chafhei, Leviticus 25, Parashat Bahar. We began to look at these psukim last week when we discussed the Ta'amei HaMitzvah, some of the lessons that we can learn from the mitzvah of Shemitah. And again, the Torah instructs us what we're not allowed to do and how it's supposed to be a Shabbat for Hashem, Shabbat LaHashem, a Shabbat for the Aretz, a Shabbat for us. And that, of course, informed the different opinions and the different approaches to this mitzvah as we explored last week. But then in Pasuk Yud, the Torah there in Vayikra Chafhei continues with the mitzvah of Yovel. It introduces the mitzvah of Yovel. Actually, even before Yud, take a look already at Pasuk Chet. We begin with Pasuk Chet, okay? V'safarta lecha sheva shabbatot, or sheva shabtot, shanim, sheva pamim, you count 7 years, 7 times, right? The Shemitah cycle is a cycle of 7 years, of course. And the Torah says you're going to count 7 cycles of 7, sheva pamim. Vayu lecha yimei sheva shabbatot, vayu lecha yimei sheva shabtot hashanim, teshav arbim shana, and that's going to give you a total of 49 years, right? 7 times 7. Vavarta shofar trua b'chodesh hashvi, besor l'chodesh, b'yom ha-kippurim, ta'aviru shofar b'chol artzechem. And then you're going to blow the shofar, okay, in the 7th month, on the 10th day of the 7th month, which is what? Yom Kippur, of course, right? And that shofar is going to be blasted throughout the land, sounded throughout the land. There's a mitzvah upon the Beit Din to count the 7 years of Shemitah and to count 7 cycles of 7 and to count a Yovel, a Jubilee year, and on that Jubilee year to sound the shofar on Yom Kippur of the Jubilee year. In fact, the minhag, or the halacha, if you will, the institution to blow the shofar on Yom Kippur each year at the end of Yom Kippur is really a zecher. It's a remembrance for this mitzvah to blow the shofar on the Shnat HaYovel, during the Jubilee year, on Yom Kippur. Okay? And just skipping, we know that there are certain halachot with regards to Yovel. Without getting into all of the details of Yovel, just skip to Pasuk Yud here. Okay? Let's focus together on Pasuk Yud. The Torah says, V'kidashtem et shnat ha-chamishim shana, u'kiratem dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveha. You shall sanctify the 50th year, make it holy. In other words, just like the 7th year, right? The shnat ha-shmitah, or shvi'it, has kiddushah, the land is holy, it's sanctified, the land, its produce is hefker, it's ownerless, it belongs to Hashem, the poor can come and eat from it. So too on the 50th year, the land is holy. And ukratem dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshven, you shall proclaim freedom throughout the land for all its inhabitants. This pasuk, of course, is famous because it's inscribed on the Liberty Bell, which resides in Philadelphia, PA, of course. But the Torah says that Yovel is supposed to be in the land l'chol yoshveha, for all of its inhabitants. And that's going to be important because, as we'll see in a moment, this implies that Yovel is only applicable. Yovel only applies when you have the inhabitants of the land residing on their land. When the land is full of her inhabitants, that's what the Shemitah, or that's what, excuse me, the Yovel requires here. Ukratim dror ba'aretz l'chol yosheveha. It's proclaimed for her inhabitants. If she doesn't have inhabitants, maybe it's not relevant. Yovel hi tiyeh lachem. It's a jubilee year for you. V'shavtem ish el chusato v'ish el mishpachto tashuvu. A special halacha without getting too much into it, but you return to your ancestral plot. Every man and his family returns to their family in inheritance, their land in the land of Israel. Okay, and the Torah again ends this pasuk with this idea of returning to the land, residing on the land. And we'll see in a moment that that is critically important, because the mitzvah of Shemitah, as we'll see in a moment, is very much tied up with mitzvah of Yovel. Just from the context here, in Vayikra Perek Chafeh, you see that while they are two different mitzvot, you have a mitzvah of Shemitah and all the different mitzvot related to Shemitah. You can't work your land, you can't do melachot, etc. And then you have these laws related to Yovel. They're two separate mitzvot, but they're very much intertwined. They're very much tied together, because Yovel is what the Torah said, as we read in Pasuk Chet, you count seven cycles of seven cycles of Shemitah, and then you have this 50th year that is the Jubilee year, the Yovel. So they're very much interconnected. And here in the Gemara, we will see this clearly. The Gemara here in source number 2, this is a Gemara in Arachin, and Daf Lamed Bet. Now the context is, the Gemara is describing the cities that were sanctified and walled cities that were sanctified by Ezra and Nehemiah during the Shivat Zion, the return to Zion in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, this heroic return to Zion that's described in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. And the Braita there in that context mentions that they counted Shemitah years and Yovel years. They counted up the years when they returned to the land. Following Galut Bavel, with the Shivat Zion Bimei Ezra v'Nehemiah, they began once again counting the Shemitot and Yovlot, or the Shemitim, the Yovlot. So the Gemara asks a question based on that Braita that the Gemara cites, and the Gemara asks, "Umi manu shmitin v'yovlot? Did they really count Shemitah years and Yovel years?" In other words, what's bothering the Gemara is, do Shemitah and Yovel apply when you don't have a majority of Jews living on their land, living in Eretz Yisrael? We'll see that that's the Gemara's question here. And as we know, and we'll come back to this in a few moments, while the efforts of Ezra and Nehemiah can only be described as heroic, you know, they led this return to the land and a spiritual renaissance. Unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of the Jewish people stayed in Bavel. Okay? So the Gemara asks, did they really count, or did they really begin counting Shmitin the Yovlot upon their return? Hashta misha galu shevet Reuven v'shevet Gad v'chatzi shevet Menashe batlu Yovlot. The Gemara assumes that following the exile of the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe, that the Yovlot became nullified. This Jubilee year became null and void, became irrelevant. Now, if you recall, of course, we read about it not too long ago in Shul, how the tribes of Reuven and Gad had a lot of cattle, a lot of flocks, Mikne Rav, they had a lot of sheep, and they saw that the land in the Transjordan was very good for their animals. This is very fertile land, it's good for grazing animals, and they request from Moshe that their portion should be on the other side of the Jordan. And at first, Moshe is incensed, and there's this back and forth, there's this whole discussion. And in the end, Moshe acquiesces so long as they agree to first come and fight the battles together with the Jewish people to conquer the land of Israel. Okay? And then all of a sudden, Moshe sticks in Chatzi Shevet Menashe, half the tribe of Menashe, which is interesting because if you look at the Torah, Menashe never makes the request of Moshe to have that land on the other side of the Yarden. So all of a sudden, Moshe stoops in Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Where does that come from? Interesting. So some explain, the Nitziv and others, that the whole point was you have half a tribe on one side of the Yarden, half a tribe on the other. Menashe will serve as the bridge to keep Reuven and Gad connected with the Jewish people. In other words, if you've got half of a tribe on one side and half of a tribe on another side of the Jordan, certainly the tribe will be in communication, the families will be in communication with one another, and so they will serve as this bridge. And you can also, of course, understand the choice of Menashe. You could ask, why Dafka Menashe? Why not, I don't know, Levi? Why not Shimon? Why not some other tribe? Menashe, of course, being one of the sons of Yosef, represents the ability to be strong in your Jewish identity while living in the exile, while living in Egypt. Ephraim and Menashe grew up in Egypt, but yet they maintained their Jewish identity. And there are many, many commentaries that suggest this. There are many examples where you see how Menashe and Ephraim maintain their Jewish identity. This was Yaakov's concern when he blesses them and he asks, who are these boys? Right? But Yosef answers, no, don't worry, Banayhem, they're my sons. Just like I was able to maintain my identity here in Egypt, so too they. And according to Rav Hirsch and others, that's why we bless our children to be like Menashe and Ephraim, not only because they didn't fight, you know, there was, it's they didn't have that sibling rivalry that you see throughout Sefer Bereishit, but more than that, because they maintained their identity amidst the foreign culture. So Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Menashe settle on the other side of the Yarden. And while perhaps Moshe, by stooping in Chatzi Shevet Menashe, intended that they maintain their connection and preserve their identity, nevertheless, we know that they were the first tribes to be exiled, even before the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom, even before Sancheriv, Melech Ashur, exiles the 10 tribes, what we call the 10 lost tribes. In Sefer Divrei HaYamim, Aleph, Chronicles 1, Perek, Hey, Chapter 5, it's described how Hashem, the God of Israel, roused the spirit of Pul, Melech Ashur. Pul, maybe they called him Paul, I don't know, in Divrei HaYamim, his Pul, the king of Ashur, and Tiglat Pilneser, Melech Ashur, another king, and they exiled Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Menashe. This is Divrei HaYamim, Aleph, Perek, Chet, Pasuk, Chavav. So they were the first tribes to be exiled. So the Gemara asks, already, once the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and the half-tribe of Menashe were exiled, Batlu Yovlot, the Yovel became nullified. Why? Because as we read, the Yovel requires Kol Yoshveha Aleha, all of her inhabitants. And here, you're missing 2.5 tribes. And in fact, the Gemara continues and sharpens the question by Ezra Dichtiv Bey. It's written in the second chapter of Ezra Perek Bet, Pasuk Samach Dalet, Kol HaKahal Ke'echad Arba Ribo Alafim V'Shesh Meot V'Shishim. So it's described in the second chapter of Ezra that only 42,360 Jews came up together with Ezra from Bavel. Where was everyone else? They decided to stay in Bavel. Bavel was a vibrant Jewish community, a thriving Jewish community. They had yeshivot there, bate knesset there, mikvot, yeshivot. I'm sure they even had kosher pizza shops in Bavel. And Chazal, in a number of places, describe why they did not want to leave and what they were concerned about. You know, Eretz Yisrael at that time was a wasteland. It was inhospitable. They were concerned, perhaps, that the second temple would not last, and they were unwilling to go off into the wilderness with Ezra and Nehemiah. Now, there was, before Ezra, there was a first Aliyah, let's call it, but like our contemporary return to Zion, the second Aliyah is much larger than the first. So, and then subsequently, there's even a later Aliyah together with Nehemiah, but up with Ezra, the Tanakh describes, Ezra Perek Bet describes how the whole congregation was only 42,360. So the Gemara asks, so if that's true, Hava Mane, would they have counted the Yovel? Okay, so again, the Yovel, it would seem, requires Kol Yoshveh Ha'aleh. In fact, the Gemara continues, Ditanya. Gemara cites a Breita. It was taught in the Breita. Mishgalu Shevet Ruvein v'Shevet Gad v'Chatzi Shevet HaMenashe Batlu Yovlot. When the tribes of Ruvein, Gad, half the tribe of Menashe, as we explained, were exiled, the Yovel became null and void. Shin Emar, and here the Breita that the Gemara cites brings the pasuk that we began with. V'karat adror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveha. You shall proclaim freedom throughout the land to all of its inhabitants. Now, those two words, l'chol yoshveha, are crucial for this Breita. You need to have all of its inhabitants on that land in order for Shemitah to be relevant, in order for Shemitah to be applicable, in order for Shemitah to be min ha-Torah. Bizman shekol yoshveha aleha, v'lo bizman shegalu miktzatan, the Gemara says, or the Breita here says. That implies, what does it mean? All of its inhabitants have to be upon her. Yeah, when all of its inhabitants are upon her, bizman shekol yoshveha aleha, v'lo bizman shegalu miktzatan, and not when you have only, what? Only some of them, when some of them have been exiled. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is once the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Menashe were exiled, the Yovel becomes Batel. Okay? And so the Gemara asks, so how could it be that in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, they counted Shmitot and Yovel? They didn't have anyone. They didn't have everyone. It wasn't Kol Yoshveh Aleha. They only had, only 42,360 came with Ezra. Right? Some came before, some came after. Then the Breita continues, Yachol hayu aleha, v'hein mu'uravin. Maybe what? Maybe you could say that if you have everyone there, but they're mixed up, okay, they're mu'uravin, they're intermingled. What does that mean? Shevet Binyamin bi'Yehuda. You had the tribe of Binyamin in the portion of Yehuda. V'shevet Yehuda b'Binyamin. And the tribe of Yehuda in Binyamin, right? Yehuda and Binyamin were part of the southern kingdom, Malchut Yehuda. They lasted longer. First you had, as we explained, the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe exiled. Following with the exile of the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom, Malchut Yisrael, the 10 lost tribes conquered by Sancheriv Melech Ashur. But then you had the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin. But the tribes of Binyamin were mixed up. So what if you have them mixed up, right? You have Binyamin and Yehuda, you have Yehuda and Binyamin. Ye Yovel Noheg. So then maybe that's okay. The Yovel should be still in effect. Talmud Lomar, no, the pasuk comes to teach l'chol yoshveh bizman sheyoshveh kitikunan velo bizman shehein mu'uravin. All of its inhabitants, kol yoshveh implies when they are there according to their proper arrangement, kitikunan, and not when they're all intermingled. Now, this is subject to much discussion and debate and machloket, how you interpret what that means. Does that mean that each tribe has to be sitting exactly on its ancestral portion somehow? How would you ever accomplish that? So there are different opinions as to how to interpret that. We'll see. We'll come back to that, Be'ezrat Hashem. But what this Gemara here in Arachin Lamed Bet says is that in order for the Yovel to be Min HaTorah, you need to have Kol Yoshveha Aleha. The mitzvah of Yovel requires all of its inhabitants, as it says, as the Pasuk says, you have to proclaim freedom throughout the land for all of its inhabitants. Yes, all of its inhabitants. Now, all, every single Jew, or as we'll see, maybe a majority suffices. But that's with regards to Yovel. What about Shemitah? So we'll see here, based on the Gemara in Gittin, and there's also a parallel passage at the beginning of the Gemara in Moed Katan, that it would seem that Shemitah depends on the Yovel. Shemitah is very much connected to the Yovel, as we began with, as the Torah itself suggests. And maybe when you don't have Yovel, when Yovel is not in effect, by extension, maybe you don't have Shemitah, min HaTorah. And maybe Shemitah, bizman hazeh, is only midrabanan, when you don't have all of its inhabitants resting upon her land. Kol Yoshveha Aleha. Okay? So take a look at source number 3. This is a Gemara in Masechet Gittin and Daf Lamed Vav. And the Gemara there describes and discusses the prose bowl that Hillel HaZaken instituted. Now, what is a prose bowl? So besides for Shmitat Karkaut, which we discussed last week, the mitzvah of letting the land lie fallow and not working the land, there's also the mitzvah of Shmitat Ksafim, which we mentioned Derech Agav last week. There's a mitzvah where the Shemitah year, or the end of the Shemitah year more precisely, the end of the seventh year cancels out all debts. Now you can imagine, if debts are automatically canceled with the end of each seventh year, no one's going to want to lend money. Right? Why? Because no one's going to pay their money back, right? So it's going to be very difficult to encourage anyone to lend money. And that poses a problem because our Torah has this vision of an equitable society where you are concerned for the poor and those who need a loan, those who need money. And there are all sorts of mitzvot, neshech, ribit, with regards to extending loans. But there are also all sorts of halachot in Shas with regards to taking certain actions in order not to prevent lenders from lending money. Shalolin ol delet bifnei lavin. Right? All sorts of halachot. We don't want to make things difficult for lenders because, again, the Torah has this vision of this equitable society where you can get a loan. Right? Not like when I go try to apply for a loan here at Bank HaPoalim. Again, borrowers at the right. The Torah is concerned, and Chazal were concerned for borrowers. But if you make things difficult for lenders, that's going to affect the borrowers, right? Borrowers are not going to be able to get the loans if lenders are discouraged. So we have all sorts of halachot. There's a whole area of halacha where we try not to discourage. We try not to shalolinol delet. We don't want to close the door. And prevent borrowers from borrowing money, prevent lenders from lending money. We don't want to discourage lenders. So Hillel instituted this practice of the prose bowl, which is good for the buli and the buti. The Gemara explains that's why it's called a prose bowl. You know, you got your pros, you got your cons. This is only a pro. It's very good for both the poor and the rich. It's good for the lender and the borrower alike. It allows you to write up this contract to circumvent Shmitat Ksafim. It allows you to write a contract whereas the loan is not canceled out by the end of the Shemitah year. So the Gemara here in Gittin, the Gemara mentions on that Mishnah, Hillel Hitkin Prosbo. Hillel instituted this concept of a Prosbo. The Gemara asks, how did Hillel do that? How could he cancel out a mitzvah that's min HaTorah? Right? How did Hillel circumvent this? The Torah says that all loans are canceled. All debts are null and void. And here Hillel comes along and he circumvents a Torah law. And so the Gemara asks, Umi ika midei? How did he do that? Midoraita mishmata shvi'it. Behikin Hillel delo mishmata min haTorah. From the Torah, the debt is canceled. And here comes along Hillel and somehow makes this institution of a prose bowl where the debt is not canceled. How does he do that? Oh, Amar Abayi bishvit bizman hazeh. You know how he was able to do that? He was able to do that because Shemitah nowadays is only midrabanan. That's how many explain the Gemara. There are many different explanations as to how the prose bowl works, how Hillel was able to make this enactment, institute this prose bowl, but it's not our topic this morning. Bezrat Hashem, later on this year, we'll discuss Shemitat Ksafim and prose bowl. As I mentioned, the Shemitat Ksafim takes effect at the end of the seventh year. So we've got some time. There are many Rishonim and Achronim that try to grapple and understand, grapple with this question, try to understand what exactly does it mean and how was Hillel able to enact this. But a simple explanation is because Bizman HaZeh, nowadays, Shemitah is only Derabanan, it's only rabbinic. So Hillel, right, was able to make this rabbinic enactment in order to cancel out the this mitzvah of Shemitah Ksafim, which is only rabbinic in nature. Okay, or he was able to make this work around, to circumvent it, because Shemitah Ksafim Bizman HaZeh is only Derabanan, so he can make this rabbinic enactment in order to circumvent it, this device, this legal device, this contract. Okay? Oh, so that's what we'll see. Good. That's what we'll see. And then the Gemara continues, V'Rebihi. And this is consistent with the opinion of Rebbe, and this, I think, will address your question. Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, of course, the great Rebbe, who redacted the Mishnah, lived in the second century. The Gemara cites a braita, Ditanya Rebbe Omer, we have a braita where Rebbe said, V'zeh davar HaShemitah Shamot. This is the way of Shemitah, of stopping, of abrogation. He shall abrogate. So the Gemara says, or really this Braita says, Bishtei Shemitot takatuv midaber. The Braita addresses your question. It says that the Torah there in Devarim Tetvav, Deuteronomy chapter 15, is referring to both types of Shemitah. Achat Shemitat Karka, one is referring to the Shemitah of the land. Achat Shemitat Ksafim, and one is referring to the Shemitah of money, right? Monetary Shemitah, canceling out the debts. And the Gemara Kedira, the Braita continues, Bizman Sheta Mishamet Karka, Ata Mishamet Ksafim. At a time when you, what? When you don't work your land, you stop or release your land, you release your debts, your money. Bizman she'iyata mishamet karka, iyata mishamet ksafim. At a time when you don't observe Shemitah, you don't let the land rest, meaning when it doesn't apply on a Torah level. So iyata mishamet ksafim, you also don't release the debts on a Torah level. That's what we're saying. So the braita here is linking Shmitat Karka to Shmitat Ksafim. And the Gemara is saying is when Shmitat Karka applies, Shmitat Ksafim applies. When Shmitat Ksafim applies, Shmitat Karka applies. And so since Shemitah in general is only Derabanan. That is what the assumption of the Gemara is. Since Shemitah in general is only Derabanan, that's how Hillel was able to come along and enact the prose bowl. Because Shemitah Ksafim is only Derabanan. What the Gemara is saying, and what's important for our discussion this morning, is you see that a simple understanding of the Gemara is that Shemitah nowadays is only Derabanan. At least according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Okay? Yes, I'm sorry. You had a question in the back. So no, so it applies on a Dirabanan level. Okay, it applies on a Dirabanan level. And then the Gemara continues, V'takin Rabbanan, D'tishamet Zecher L'Shvi'it. The Chachamim came along, and again, when you no longer have Shemitah on the land, so you no longer have Shemitah Ksafin, right? When Shemitah no longer applies, it doesn't apply to both categories of Shemitah. The Gemara, it would seem, is working with the assumption that Shemitah does not apply, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and that's why Hillel was able to make this enactment of the Prose Bowl, right? But even though Shemitah Ksafim doesn't apply min HaTorah, the Gemara continues, V'takinu Rabbanan d'tishamet zecher l'shvit. The rabbis instituted that you observe Shemitah Ksafim, right, as a remembrance of Shemitah, of how when Kol Yoshve Aleha, maybe, if that's what the requirement is, you had Shemitat Ksafim min HaTorah. So it's only the Rabbanan Bizman Hazeh. It's a Zeche L'Shvi'it. Ra Hillel, Hillel saw She Nimne'u Ha'am Mi Lahalvot Zeh Etzeh. Hillel saw that people were not giving loans one to another. Amad V'Hitkin Prose Bowl. So he stood up and instituted Prose Bowl. What gave him the authority to do so, again, without getting too much into the sinyan, very simply, is because Bizman Hazeh, it's only the Rabbanan. So therefore, he was allowed to make this rabbinic enactment. Okay? And take a look at Rashi here, where I've underlined at the bottom of the page, source number 4. So the Gemara here assumes that Shemitah is rabbinic nowadays. And that's why Hillel was allowed to do what he did. And we said that this follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In fact, the Gemara at the very beginning of Masechet Moed Katan, I mentioned there's a parallel passage to this passage in Gittin. There's a parallel passage, the beginning of Moed Katan and Daf Bet, which asks a question based on the Mishnah, which describes certain activities that can be done during the Shemitah year. Certain malachot asks, how's that possible? And the Gemara says, oh, that follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who holds that Bizman Hazeh, Shemitah is only the Rabbanan. And so therefore, there's certain allowances, certain leniencies, certain types of activities in certain conditions or under certain conditions that are permitted. Okay? But the Gemara here in Gittin doesn't tell us why Shemitah is the Rabbanan. Right? The Gemara works with the assumption that Shemitah is the Rabbanan. Since Shemitah is only the Rabbanan, it's only rabbinic nowadays, that's what gave Hillel the authority to enact his Prose Bowl. Okay? But why is Shemitah only the Rabbanan? In fact, the Gemara draws on this idea that, well, how do we know that Shemitah Ksafim is the Rabbanan? Because Shemitah Karkaot is the Rabbanan. But how do we know that? How do we know that Shemitah is only the Rabbanan? So take a look at Rashi, where I've underlined. Rashi writes, "Dibibayit sheni hoil v'lo haya yovel noheg, lo nahagu shmitin mi deoraita." Oh, since during the Second Temple, right, Yovel was not observed, therefore Shemitah was not observed, at least on a Torah level. Okay, so you see that Shemitah is dependent on Yovel. And we said that Yovel requires what in order to be min HaTorah? Kol Yoshveha Aleha. It requires all of her inhabitants to be residing on her land. So when you don't have Kol Yoshveha Aleha, right, we said you don't have Yovel min HaTorah. And when you don't have Yovel min HaTorah, you don't have Shemitah min HaTorah, because Shemitah is dependent on the Yovel. Okay? So it would seem from Rashi, a simple reading of the Gemara, that Shemitah nowadays is only Midrabanan. It's only rabbinic, because once you don't have the Yovel, you don't have Kol Yoshveh Aleha, the Shemitah is dependent on the Yovel. That's how most Rishonim Paskin, most Rishonim assume that Shemitah is dependent on the Yovel. When Yovel is not min HaTorah, so Shemitah is not min HaTorah as well. But you see that opinion was attributed to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In fact, if you take a look, it would seem to be a machloket, it seemed to be machloket Tanaim between Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and the Chachamim, whether Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Doraita or Dirabanan. According to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, it's Dirabanan. And that seems to be how most Rishonim rule. Okay? Now, what's interesting, I'll just mention as an aside, and then we'll try and summarize the different opinions of the Rishonim. There is an opinion that maybe Shemitah is dependent on the Beit HaMikdash. That's the opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch, but that's very difficult to understand. But it would seem that, according to that opinion, that Shemitah applied even during Bayit Sheni. Once they had a Beit HaMikdash, so long as you have a Beit HaMikdash, so then you have Shemitah Min HaTorah. When you no longer have a Beit HaMikdash, Shemitah is only Durabanan. So even according to the Sefer HaChinuch, Bizman HaZeh, Shemitah would be Midrabanan. But again, most Rishonim assume that Shemitah is dependent on the Yovel, and Yovel requires Kol Yoshveha Aleha. Okay? Yes? Correct. So that's what the Gemara in Arachin says, that once the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe were exiled, you no longer had Kol Yoshvei Aleha. No. Because no, well, that was considered part of Kol Yoshvei Aleha. Correct. Look, there's a lot of discussion in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara about Syria and other places are Trumot and Ma'asrot observed in those places, lands near Eretz Yisrael, next to Eretz Yisrael. Is that Doraita or only Dirabanan, even when you had a Beit HaMikdash, even when you were keeping Trumot and Ma'asrot on a Torah level? Maybe there were certain places next to Eretz Yisrael where it was Dirabanan. There's a lot of discussion. But what the Gemara is assuming is that is called Kol Yoshvei Aleha. Okay. So take a look. Turn the page. Rashi makes another point. Bizman she'iata mishamet karka. Right, the Gemara told us, when you don't have Shemitah on the land, you don't have Shemitat Ksafim. And Rashi adds, kigon, Rashi comments there, kigon, achshav. For example, nowadays, shebatla kidushat ha'aretz, when there is no sanctity to the land. Now, Rashi is adding another nekudah here. It's not only that you don't have a majority or all of her inhabitants residing on her land. Following the destruction of the second temple, according to at least one opinion, the land of Israel loses its sanctity. This is a machloket Tanaim, machloket Amoraim throughout the Talmud, whether batla kidushat shnia, kitsha l'sha'ata, kitsha latid lavo, whether Ezra and Nehemiah and those who came up from Babel together with Ezra and Nehemiah, whether they sanctified the land at that moment and for all eternity, or no, whether they only sanctified the land for that moment in time. And when the Jewish people went into exile, following the destruction of the second temple, the land lost its sanctity. So this is the subject of Machloket. So Rashi here seems to suggest that the reason why Shemitah doesn't apply is not only because Yovel doesn't apply, but the whole thing is dependent on Kiddushat Ha'aretz. Okay, by the fact that her inhabitants are not on their land, that means that there is no Kiddushat Ha'aretz, and therefore Shemitah Bizman Hazed does not apply. It's only rabbinic. It's only the Rabbanan. The rabbis instituted it post facto. The Rambam has a different approach. The Rambam assumes, the Rambam takes the position, I mentioned it's machloket Tanaim, machloket Amoraim, how we paskin. The Rambam takes the position, no, kitcha l'shata, kitcha latid lavo. He writes this in a few different places in his Mishnah Torah, that the Olei Bavel sanctified the land at that moment and for all eternity. And the land did not lose its sanctity. With the biyah shniyah, they sanctified the land with this eternal sanctity that was never nullified, that did not become nullified. The Rambam believes that the land did not lose its kedusha. However, the requirements of kol yoshveha aleha are not met. And so long as kol yoshveha aleha are not met, so you don't have yovel. And when you don't have yovel, you don't have shmita min haTorah. So the Rambam also believes that shmita bizman hazeh is only derabanan, it's only rabbinic. However, slightly different than Rashi, it's not related to the kedushat haaretz. The land retains its sanctity. The sine qua non for the Rambam are there inhabitants? Have the Jewish people returned to their land? Do the Jewish people reside in their land? The Rambam, l'shitato, the Rambam is consistent. The Rambam believes that trumot u'ma'asrot are only rabbinic, bizman hazeh. And even, the Rambam writes, even during the Second Temple period, when you had a Beit HaMikdash, trumot and ma'asrot were only dirabanan, were only rabbinic. This is a machloket throughout Shas with regards to trumot and ma'asrot. It's a side point, but it is related to our discussion this morning. The Rambam views also trumot and ma'asrot that they require a biyat kulchem. It's interesting, the Gemara addresses the mitzvah of challah. And the Gemara says clearly that the mitzvah of challah, which is a type of truma, you remove the truma from your dough, you give it to the kohen. The Gemara says very clearly that that requires biyat kulchem. Why? Because the Torah begins, bevoachem, when you enter into the land. Bevoachem, it requires a biyat kulchem. And the Gemara says, lav kulhu saluk, together with Ezra and Nehemiah, as we saw, the overwhelming majority did not come. Lav kul hu suluk. Not everyone came up, the Gemara says. They stayed in Bavel. And so since they stayed in Bavel, and the mitzvah of challah requires biyat kulchem, everyone to come, so the mitzvah of challah, the Gemara says, right, is not min haTorah bizman hazeh, it's only the Rabbanan. Now the Rambam extends that to all trumot and ma'asrot, because as I said, challah is an example of truma. The Rambam requires biyat kulchem to all trumot ma'asrot. It's a major machloket rishonim, but the Rambam assumes that in order for trumot u'ma'asrot to be min haTorah, you need everyone, or at least the majority. Biyat kulchem, as the Sefer HaChinuch writes with regards to Trumot and Ma'asrot, and the Sefer HaChinuch is always basing himself on the Rambam, that rov is enough, so long as you have a majority, right? Rubam kikulam, as we say. You know, a majority is like everyone. That's considered, a majority is considered like everyone. Rubam kikulam. So long as you have a majority, then you have Trumot and Ma'asrot, min haTorah. When there is no majority, like in the Second Temple period, according to the Rambam, trumot u'ma'asrot are only midrabanan. That's how he understands this machloket throughout Shas with regards to trumot u'ma'asrot. What does the Rambam say here? Again, the Rambam lishitato requires everyone to be, or at least the majority, to be living here in the land of Israel. Source number 6. This is Hilchot Shmita v'Yovel, Perek Yud, Halachatet. He gives other examples when Yovel applies, when it's min haTorah. So you have all these other mitzvot, etc. Mikablin ger toshav, that's when you can accept gerei toshav, resident aliens. And look where I've underlined, this is important for our discussion this morning. V'noheget shvi'it ba'aretz. To answer your question, min haTorah. When you have the yovel, which we said is dependent on kol yoshveh aleha, when you have the yovel in operation, in effect, so you have these other mitzvot, eved ivri, arechoma, sadeh haramim, sadeh achuzah, you return to your land, you can reclaim your land, redeem your land, you accept gerei toshav, and that's when you have Shemitah, both Shemitah of the land and Shemitah, a monetary Shemitah, Shemitah Ksafim, Bechol Makom, in all places, to answer your question. And that is Min haTorah, when you have Kol Yoshveh HaLeah, when you have Yovel. So for the Rambam, it's not tied up with the sanctity of the land. The Rambam believes that the Olei Bavel sanctified the land with a sanctity that is eternal, that is forever. Kidshel Shata or Kidshel Atid Lavo. He takes that position in a number of places. However, for the Rambam, what's essential is that you have Kol Yoshve HaAleah, that you have Yovel, that you have Biat Kulchem. And again, Lav Dafka Kulchem, but Rubam Ki Kulam. A rove is sufficient, and this is the Ramban and others explain that even, this is the Tosfos, Sefer Achinuch, as I said, even a rove would be sufficient according to the Rambam. Now, I'll just mention as an aside, I don't want to get lost here, but there are those, like the Kesef Mishnah here, the Netziv and others, who suggest that even according to the Rambam, Shmita Bizman Hazeh, when you don't have a Yovel, is Min HaTorah. But it's clear from a simple, and there are different Girsaot, there are different versions of this Rambam, different editions based on manuscript, as the Frankel. In any case, a simple reading of the Rambam is clear that Shmita is dependent on Yovel. When you don't have Yovel, because you don't have Kol Yoshve HaAleah, you don't have a majority of the inhabitants living on their land, so then you don't have Shmita Min HaTorah. It's only rabbinic. Okay? That's, I think, clear from a simple reading of the Rambam, and that's how most understand the Rambam. Yes? Absolutely. So what if all of a sudden you have a Jewish majority, or you have, you have most of world Jewry, a majority of world Jewry living here in the land of Israel. Now do you say all of a sudden Yovel is Min HaTorah, and therefore Shemitah is Min HaTorah? And all of the stringencies all of a sudden apply. And according to the Rambam, Trumot and Ma'asrot Min HaTorah, and all of the stringencies of Trumot and Ma'asrot apply? How do you not say that? Okay, so how do you not say that? That's maybe Tosfos. Now Tosfos, it's a long Tosfos, just for the sake of time, we're almost out of time. We'll summarize some of the salient points. Tosfos here in source number 5, it's Tosfos that appears on in Gittin, and Daf Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph, starts on Amud Aleph, goes over to Amud Bet. It's a long Tosfot. For our purposes this morning, I'll just summarize. Tosfot says something very important. By the way, I just want to mention, because Rashi and Tosfot both mention this as well. It's not only Rashi here who makes that link between Shmitah and Yovel and says that when the Gemara says that Shmitah doesn't apply, Shmitat kakaot, Shmitat ksafim doesn't apply, right? And Rashi explains why, because Yovel doesn't apply, and Shmitah is dependent on Yovel. It's not Rashi's chidush. Rashi cites the Yerushalmi. It seems that the Yerushalmi makes that statement. Tosfos also cites the Yerushalmi. That the Yerushalmi links the observance of Shmitah with the observance of the Yovel. When you don't have Yovel, because you don't have Kol Yoshve HaAleah, right? So then you don't have Shmitah. So Bizman HaZeh, it's only Darbanan. But you asked a very important question. You know, maybe already we have the majority of world Jewry living here. It's a question, you know, amongst, it's a machloket amongst statisticians and, poskim. And, well, maybe soon, Bezrat Hashem will have the majority of world Jewry living here in the land of Israel. Now, does that mean that all of a sudden Yovel is Min HaTorah because you have the majority of Jews living on their land? And Shemitah, therefore, is Min HaTorah because Shemitah is dependent on Yovel and Trumot and Ma'asrot? Very serious question. So Tosfot says something interesting. Tosfot emphasizes, remember the Gemara said that in addition to Kol Yoshve HaAleah, the Gemara interprets that to mean not only do you have to have a majority, but what? You have to have her residents, you have to have her people dwelling on her land, but also have them dwelling where? In their places, right? In their ancestral plots, in their portions, according to each tribe. Now, how do you accomplish that? So it's interesting. Tosfot seems to understand that to be a real requirement. And, you know, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara about what happened with the 10 lost tribes? What happened with the 10 lost tribes? No, but did they return for the second temple, right? Or maybe the reason why during the second temple, Yovel and Shemitah were only the Rabbanan was because they didn't come back, right? You didn't have them residing on their ancestral plot. When they were exiled, there's a whole discussion, were they ultimately gathered up by Yirmiyahu Hanavi and returned to the land in order to go into exile a second time, to Galut Bavel, together with the rest of the Jewish people, together with the tribes of Yehudah and Binyamin, or were they lost to the dustbins of history and not exiled to Bavel, right? In other words, if they were gathered up, right? If they were gathered up by Yirmiyahu, in other words, they were exiled by Sancherev Melech Ashur before the destruction of the first temple, before we went into Galut Bavel. So if they were gathered up by Yirmiyahu before the destruction of the first temple, so then they were sent into exile together with the rest of the Jewish people, so that when they came up together with Ezra and Nehemiah, oh, here, they could reside on their ancestral plots, in their portions, according to each tribe. That would be according to the opinion that during the second temple period, Yovel was Min HaTorah. That's the Chachamim. Shemitah is Min HaTorah. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it's only Midrabanan. Why? Well, the way Tosfot is reading this Machloket is because even though, well, you could say, well, you didn't have a majority. You only had a small portion. But not just that, right? You didn't have those 10 tribes. They were lost to the dustbin or dust bowl of history, right? Waste bin of history. So Tosfot mentions this discussion. And you see, you could read Tosfot to mean that even if you don't have a majority, right? Maybe it's enough that you have representatives from each tribe. That's how some want to read Tosfot. Okay? Or you could read Tosfot like, no, even if you have a majority, right? Even if, as you asked, in a few years, we have the majority of world Jewry living here, Al Admat HaKodesh, Bezrat Hashem. But maybe since you don't know who's from which tribe, and, well, we have an idea where the borders were. We have some basic idea where the tribes resided, right? No. So according to the Chazon Ish, even Bizman Azeh, you can never have a situation where Yovel is Min HaTorah, and by extension, Shemitah is Min HaTorah. Why? Because you don't know who's from which tribe. How are you going to have, you know, so, okay, if you split everyone up, you can assume maybe if you put, I don't know, 25,000 people over here in this city, maybe some of them came from, Dan or whatever. But how do you know? So the Chazon Ish, in answering your question, addressing your point, the Chazon Ish says, based on this Tosfot, based on the way Tosfot reads that end of the Gemara, where the Gemara would seem to require each tribe to be dwelling in their plot. That's how the Gemara seems to be defining Kol Yoshevei Aleha. Not only that you need a majority, but you need each tribe on their land, in their portion. So the Chazon Ish says you won't have that Bizman Hazeh. It's impossible. Therefore, even if you have a majority, even if you have every single Jew living here, according to the Chazon Ish, that's not sufficient. Yovel is not Min HaTorah. Shemitah is not Min HaTorah. And is able to identify who's from which tribe and which portion. So, just to summarize, because we're out of time, the Ramban, in his commentary to Gittin, the Rosh, possibly the Ravid, assume that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Doraita. They paskin like the Chachamim. They rule like the opinion that says that Shemitah nowadays is Min HaTorah. The Ramban elsewhere seems to contradict himself and assume that it's only the Rabbanan. The Ravid also would appear to contradict himself and seems like, according to the Ravid, in one place it's only the Rabbanan. In another place, maybe it's not even the Rabbanan, maybe it's only a Minhag. We'll come to that. Most Rishonim, the overwhelming majority of Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfot, the Rambam that we saw, the Rashba, the Ritva, maybe the Ravid, maybe the Ramban in one place, but the majority of Rishonim assume that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only the Rabbanan. Why? Because it's dependent on the Yovel, as we saw this morning. And Yovel is dependent. Yovel requires Kol Yoshveha Aleha. Okay? As I said, the Chinuch has this interesting approach that it's dependent on the Beit HaMikdash, but that's a Dat Yachid. Most assume that it is the Rabbanan, Bizman Hazeh, because you need Yovel, and when Yovel is not in effect, then Shemitah is only the Rabbanan, and Yovel requires Kol Yoshveha Aleha. Then there's a third approach. This is the approach of the Ravid on the Rif to Gittin. Okay, the Ravid, I said, contradicts himself in a number of places. This is the approach of the Me'iri and the Baal HaMa'or, that Bizman Hazeh, Shemitah is only a Minhag. It's only a Midat Chasidut, because it's dependent on the Yovel. We don't have Yovel because we don't have Kol Yoshveh Aleha. And what they explain is that the descriptions you see of Amoraim, of Chachamim living during the period of the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, what they are discussing, what they are observing, when they're talking about Shemitah, we have many discussions and many accounts of Shemitah, what they're describing is a Midat Chassidut, that the Chachamim observed Shemitah during the Tkufat HaTalmud here in Eretz Yisrael, not because it was a mitzvah, even midrabanan, but no, because it was a minhag. It was an act of piety, a midat chassidut. Okay, so again, three different approaches in the Rishonim. Some say that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is min ha-Torah, they paskin like the Chachamim. Some say it's only midrabanan. The overwhelming majority of Rishonim assume that nowadays it's only rabbinic. They paskin like Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, as we explained. And then there's this third approach, a minority approach, which suggests that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only a minhag, it's only a midat chassidut. Maybe it's a zecher that we observe to remember what to do when it becomes applicable once again. And there are major implications. You know, we began the shir by asking whether Bizman Hazeh, the mitzvah Shemitah, is min ha-Torah or only midrabanan, ulamai nafkamina, what are the implications, you know, of what consequence is it, whether you say it's biblical or only rabbinic, or maybe only a custom or some sort of zecher or an act of piety? Well, there are major implications, one of which, maybe the important, most important of all the nafkaminot, is heter mechira. Because if you say that the mitzvah is only the rabbanan, it's only rabbinic, or maybe according to some, only an act of piety, only a minhag, Zeicher, Midat Chassidut. Again, that's a minority opinion. Most assume that it's rabbinic, but even if it's rabbinic, so we know that with rabbinic law, with rabbinic enactments, there's some flexibility, there's some latitude. If people's parnassah is at stake, we can be lenient. So major implications with regards to the Heter Mechira, which we will discuss Be'ezrat Hashem next week. Okay?